Hey, everybody, welcome. Thank you for tuning in. My name is Matthew. Today, I'm going to continue with the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. I'm going to show you the liability side. That's where you find the money. And I'm going to show you that final missing component, which I mentioned yesterday. That is the reverse repo facility. All right, so here we have again the long scale 108, 109 nearly year chart of the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. Two monetary epochs where the first 95 years or so of the Federal Reserve, they took their balance sheet from a couple hundred million dollars to $900 billion. And then, of course, the GFC, the global financial crisis, the next monetary epoch, which we are in right now, the last 15 years, where they started at under $1 trillion, $900 billion. And now, as of today, and even as of the last 2 weeks, as I showed you, they almost hit $9 trillion last year. Jerome Powell's Jackson Hole speech, going to start hiking rates, whether you like it or not. That was too much for Silicon Valley Bank and many others in the banking system, and whoop, reversed it over the last 2 weeks. I'm showing last week as a flat line, by the way. I don't know this data. I could have left that off this chart. Probably would have been more convenient. But these last 2 weeks, as you see here, that is March 22nd, March 15th, they reversed basically this quantitative tightening of $600 billion, already back up another $400 billion to $8.7 trillion. This is the Federal Reserve's balance sheet as of right now. Yesterday, in the last video, I showed you the monetary base. What is it? It's notes, physical cash, physical currency. Coins are also a part of it, not for the Federal Reserve, not for the Bank of England. Let's not worry about that too much right now. And bank reserves. Bank reserves, that is each bank accounts bank at the central bank. And you see bank reserves, of course, has exploded. Also have notes gotten printed at a faster clip, but the bank reserve account, that is each bank's account with the Federal Reserve, of course, is the main story of central banking post-2008. And if we look at a percentage, notes versus balance sheet, yesterday I showed you notes versus the monetary base. So again, these two dark green shaded areas, you know, they've changed here. This is the monetary base. This is what you call base money, central bank money, the monetary base. The percentage here you see is notes now. Yesterday I showed you notes, a percentage of the monetary base. Now I'm showing you notes as a percentage of the total balance sheet. And again, you're not wrong to say the whole balance sheet is money printing. The entirety of the balance sheet means money printing. Technically, this is money printing, okay? But just the monetary base. This is what finds its way into the financial system, into the banking system. However, as they do, central banks are clever enough to get around their mandate and to help out whoever they think they need to help out, and more probably appropriately put, bail out whoever they think they need to bail out. No one thought they would buy mortgage-backed securities, which is indirectly owning real estate. They did that after 2008. The Bank of Japan, Swiss National Bank, they buy stocks. I've talked about this many times. There's nothing limiting. Even if you can say statutorily, you can only buy government treasuries with the money that you print ex nihilo, there's really going to be nothing limiting what a central bank can buy with its own money that it can print ex nihilo at the end of the day. And we can see that now with this final gap here. This, you see that most of the balance sheet, indeed throughout most of its history, is notes and bank reserves. And indeed, notes are the vast majority. From the Great Moderation after the fall of the gold standard, they went up to 90 plus percent of the monetary base or of the balance sheet. Almost the same percentage thing I'm showing you here. 90 plus percent notes, those green pieces of paper that you know and love or hate, Federal Reserve notes, 90% of the balance sheet by the turn of the millennium. Again, these little bumps, Y2K, 9/11, Federal Reserve notes, a portion of the Fed's balance sheet. They were basically nothing, 1%, 2% when the Fed opened their doors. And then you can see World War I. Right here, this first bump hidden a little bit by the tooltip, notes exploded to 50% of the balance sheet when the U.S. entered World War I, which was right here, precisely the moment that it exploded. Obviously, these were the purchase of war bonds. The Great Depression, they printed a lot of money here, not at the outset. Indeed, at the outset, the supply of notes fell We can talk more about the Great Depression in the future, but they printed eventually, and then of course they printed notes as well as bank reserves during World War II. That of course is also going to go for the purchase of war bonds. So let me take away notes. Reserves definitely are printed here at certain times, but we can see that notes, interestingly, sprung up at different times more than reserves. In either case, whether it's the reserve account, that is the bank account for all banks in the system, or notes, it's always more than before. Okay, and we talked about trend lines, the exponential growth. Do see my prior videos for that. But now this is, you know, I always have to do these little reviews when I start the video because I feel like I need to do it to ease into the next topic. This is definitely going to be a how, not a what or why video too much, but how did the rest of the balance sheet look from after QE1, right here is QE1, global financial crisis, Ben Bernanke comes, helicopter Ben, although he's not printing paper money, he's printing digital money, bailing out banks with bad bets of mortgage-backed securities. This is bailout one, QE1, QE2, QE3. Now you see the gap gets bigger here as each QE comes, gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Then you see, of course, this is what's known as the repo, the seizing up of the repo market or the repo hiccup in September 2019. And then, of course, we have COVID, which is just a new bout of money printing, as well as reserve requirements went out the window here, all the rest. But now you see the gap just explode in difference here. And what is that? What's happening? Well, again, we're looking at the liability side of the balance sheet. The black line, again, let's just make it clear. The black line, what does that represent? It's total assets. Total assets, so all of the mortgage-backed securities, all the government bonds, even the gold, which is marked in a very poorly fashion. It's marked to the statutory gold price of $42 an ounce, roughly, if they have it, indeed, in their coffers. These are the total assets of the Federal Reserve. Over their history, they went from, again, $900 billion to now $8.7 trillion. As of last week, the Federal Reserve should publish an updated balance sheet actually today. So this is total assets. Now again, back to liabilities. What makes up the assets? How do they print the money, literally ex nihilo? What does it look like when they buy those assets? Well, this is how it has looked like with the paper that they've printed. This is how the reserves have looked like. And then we have this gap. What is it? What is going on here? It is called the reverse repurchase agreement facility, and you can see it nearly completes the gap of liabilities to assets. The only remaining liabilities are some very, very basic loans that aren't calculated as base money and basically equity capital. We don't need to get into that right now, but basically this completes the gap of matching our liabilities with assets on the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. One thing I want to say really quickly about the reverse repurchase agreement facility before I tell you exactly what it is. And again, I've already done this. Do see my repurchase agreement video. Do see that. That was on a monthly basis. And we go back to the 60s when we talk about that, part of my money supply series. Again, this is a weekly chart now. I've never showed a weekly chart before other than the last few days. Let's take away notes. Let's take away reserves. And let's see when this stuff actually started to be published, okay? And I'm even going to take away this notes versus the balance sheet. Let's look at the reverse repurchase agreement facility as a percentage of the balance sheet, okay? We see it's exploding here, but let's go back even to when the Federal Reserve started to publish it. This date is interesting to me, 18th of December. This is the first time that the Fed started to calculate the balance sheet digitally and disseminate the data digitally. And before this, I have, again, as I mentioned in a prior video, how did I get all this data back to 1914? Well, the Center for Financial Stability, Mr. Barnett, wonderful economist I've mentioned before, these guys have done Herculean work to basically digitize old paper bulletins that the Federal Reserve has printed throughout the years. I'm still curious here, though, because this, just zooming in a little bit here, this reverse repurchase agreement facility, I will explain what it is in a second. It just seems interesting to me that on the same date that they would start publishing more detailed balance sheet data, let's say electronically, they also shed light on what are reverse repurchase agreements at $22 billion roughly. Now, it's not a huge percentage, but it's also not nothing. 3% of the balance sheet. If anyone knows anything about the history of this facility, even deeper than this, I would be keen to understand. I don't want to necessarily say it's completely nefarious, even though, you know, the Federal Reserve is a monopoly. We can't control what they do. I just have a hard time believing that all of a sudden, I didn't see a legal precedent here. I have a hard time believing that all of a sudden the Federal Reserve is going to engage in the repo market to the tune of $22 billion. On the exact same date that they start publishing more detailed balance sheet data. And again, Mr. Barnett, the Center for Financial Stability, they've looked into prior bulletins. There is no data on reverse repurchase agreements before this. So it's kind of an interesting little fact of reporting history again. So dear listener, viewer, as you know, I like Bitcoin. Everything on the blockchain is completely transparent. We have what we have here with the Fed. Nonetheless, the reverse repurchase facility, it started precisely on the day, December 18th, 2002, that the Federal Reserve started publishing weekly balance sheet information online. Interesting coincidence or not, I'm just not sure. But this is the reverse repurchase facility. Now, what is it? Basically, this is liquidity. This is money that the Federal Reserve is offering non-banks. Okay? So unlike reserves, right, which is the darker shaded portion here, and did indeed explode, and were basically nothing. Now, let's take off even the reverse repos here for a second. I mean, remember, the notes as a percentage were huge here, 90%, right? On the eve of the global financial crisis, 85 to 90%, the note percentage. Reserves, out of $900 billion in balance sheet asset value, reserves, bank reserves, were, you know, $20 billion, $30 billion, $40 billion. At various times. So reserves were not part of the story at all, at all. And as I've mentioned before, Ben Bernanke told Milton Friedman, I believe in the late 90s, it could have been the start of the 2000s, that the Federal Reserve did cause a lot of mistakes during the Great Depression, or at least exacerbated the Great Depression. We'll never do that again. And indeed, he stuck true to his word by exploding the reserve balances, i.e. printing digital money for banks, buying with the money that they created ex nihilo, buying bad assets from their books during the global financial crisis, and indeed exploding the balance sheet value from under a trillion to 2, 3, 4 trillion, and the reserve balance exploded accordingly from, you know, and this was the explosion, essentially, was the reserve account, from 20, 30, 40 billion to 1 trillion, 2 trillion, eventually after QE3 was all said and done, almost $3 trillion. So, the reverse repo facility. Let's put it back and let's take out reserves. Let's take out notes. Let's show now this percentage again. What is the percentage of the balance sheet of the reverse repo facility? You can see that it has this mysterious start at the same date that the Fed publishes more detailed data, 3% of the balance sheet, and then eventually increases. Not such an explosion, still stays at about 3% of the balance sheet, although that's, of course, increasing in value, right? Because the balance sheet itself is exploding. So it goes from, you know, a couple billion, 20 billion or so, up to 60 billion, 50 billion, up and down, whatever. And as QE crescendos here, as QE has finished, and Ben Bernanke starts another round of taper tantruming in 2017, 2018 here. And again, if you were a Bitcoiner here and were saying at any point from 2014 to 2018 that all the Federal Reserve does is print money, print, 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 you are not being precise. They were not printing at all at this moment. On balance, they were printing more notes, but they were taking away reserves. They were also, though, increasing this reverse repurchase agreement facility. Now, this is not part of the monetary base, and as I've said, this is basically liquidity for non-banks. Do see my video on repurchase agreements and on the nature of them as they relate to M3, as well as the total money supply. But the Federal Reserve has never had such a influential position in the repurchase agreement as it has now. So let's just zoom in. Again, they went from 3% of the repurchase agreement market up to maybe 6, at sometimes 10, sometimes more than 10%, as the Federal Reserve started to try to taper or normalize their balance sheet, as they like to say, from, you know, nearly $5 trillion here in 2014, 2015, 2016. And then they actually went down a little bit, the value. And then this moment right here, September 2019, this was known as the repo spike, or the seizing up of the repo market. The repo market, the repo rate spiked to some 10% or more, maybe even. And then you see that the Federal Reserve's balance sheet grows. Repos don't explode from the Federal Reserve's side yet. They do increase a little bit more here during COVID. But it's still the story is still bank reserves. During COVID, of course, the explosion of the money supply here was primarily bank reserves. Here you see the dark shaded area. But again, I want to take off reserves, take off notes. Let's just look at repos. And then, of course, as COVID continued on, 2021, 2022, the Federal Reserve has basically made it crystal clear that they are going to stand by and provide liquidity to essentially non-banks that would like to repo with the Federal Reserve. So one confusing thing here again, I understand why they're doing it, but the Federal Reserve calls this the reverse repurchase agreement facility, reverse repos. This is from the perspective of the system, of the financial system, specifically the non-banks, and more specifically than that, likely a money market fund, a money market mutual fund that is typically going to be the other side, the counterparty in this agreement. So they are the reverse repo party. So like reserves, right, it's called bank reserves. This is from the perspective of the banks, the counterparty to the Fed here. The Fed has a liability. Who has the asset? The banks. So the bank reserves. With repos, this is why they're doing it. You call this the reverse repurchase agreement because the reverse repo party is a non-bank, typically a money market fund. So that's why they use that name. But it's confusing because the Fed's balance sheet itself, what is it? Well, the Fed is the repo party. So it's a liability for the Fed. That means they are the repo party. It is a repo for them, a reverse repo for the non-bank entity, most primarily and typically a money market fund. That is why they use this nomenclature again. So as you can see, it's exploded to 30% of the balance sheet, this facility. Now, it's not technically base money. They haven't gone as far as calling it base money because, again, banking legislation, what is the Federal Reserve? They're supposed to be restricted to legislation, right? The Federal Reserve Act and whatnot. They're not supposed to interact with non-banks like they do, but they've started to do that since 2002, conveniently the same day that they started to publish more data. And this has exploded as of only a couple years ago, as of 2021, 2022, this portion of the balance sheet has exploded. It's monumental. I mean, you've gone from, you know, $200 billion here in 2020 to, you know, COVID was still on, bank reserves were on, but everybody apparently needs to have liquidity from the Federal Reserve. So the money market funds went from being, you know, $200 billion in counterparty value to the Federal Reserve to being almost $3 trillion, $2.6 trillion. Out of an $8.5 trillion balance sheet, that's 30%. That's a huge explosion of liquidity provided to non-banks. So that's all that it means, basically. The repo market is a huge thing in itself. It comprises M3 when the Federal Reserve is not involved. Very important thing to keep in mind there. When the Federal Reserve is not involved, when it's just money market funds, it's just banks, those that have a liability on their balance sheet, i.e. this, a liability, doesn't matter if it's a central bank or bank, but if it's a liability on the balance sheet of that entity, that's a repo. So you just count up all the repos, and that's basically government securities that trade like cash. You're collateralizing government securities. Repos aren't that complicated, but yes, you're recollateralizing government securities. It means that now you're rehypothecating government securities. It means that, you know, not only does the Treasury pay interest on those securities, but also the Federal Reserve is now going to pay additional interest on those securities to money market funds, so on and so forth. So, you know, leveraging on assets happens all the time in the banking system, but the Federal Reserve has never done this for non-banks the way that they are doing this now. Okay, so let's take the reverse repo facility off. This was what they were doing for banks, all right? And they've been actually declining that, right, until the last 2 weeks, as you can see. Most of the bump in the balance sheet, that $400 billion bump, came in the form of increased bank reserves. Okay, so that's important to note after the Silicon Valley restructuring / bailout. And then, of course, we have the notes. That's just constantly growing. And by the way, physical cash grows all the time around the world. So we'll come back to this when we talk about CBDCs. And then we have this reverse repurchase facility, which the Federal Reserve is leading the way here in dealing with non-banks this way, providing liquidity to non-banks this way. They've never done it before. It's now 30% of the balance sheet. If we take notes, which again, this stuff is stacked now on the right-hand side, even the percentages. So notes used to be 90% of the balance sheet, repurchase agreement 3 or 4%. That meant that 10%, 7% was bank reserves. Bank reserves exploded to be, you know, 50, 60% of the balance sheet after the GFC, even more after QE3, close to 65, 70% of the balance sheet. This reverse repurchase facility has changed that. Of course, bank reserves exploded during COVID. But now, if you add up the two numbers on the percentage side, the right axis, the blue and the red, 30% for repos or reverse repos that money market funds hold there, the reverse repo counterparty, 26% in notes. Reserves have fallen still again, and you can see that reserves are falling on a gross basis here, even though they weren't the last couple weeks. Reserves are falling again to make way for liquidity that non-banks are seeking from the Federal Reserve, primarily money market funds. We'll continue to talk more about this, the nature of this, why this happened. You have to go back in history to do this, and you have to start to look at interest rates to do this. So I'll start to do that in the next few videos. This is the peculiar thing about banking, and in some sense it's natural, but the more regulations you have, the more unintended consequences you have. That certainly is the case of the growth of the money market fund, both now and during and before the financial crisis of 2008. That's the case for the money market fund. That's the case for the broker-dealer entity of the United States. These things, you know, we are looking at the repercussions of legislation that is 20, 30, 50, even sometimes 100 years old. In some sense, you could even make the argument that what happens now is a peculiar fact of the United States system due to the way that the United States was set up even before the Federal Reserve was founded. I will explain more of that in future videos, but the key takeaway there, the key point, is that nothing comes from nothing here. The explosion of the balance sheet, yes, it was the decision of central bankers on a planning board, which Friedrich Hayek told us that was impossible to do when you talk about managing an economy, planning from on high, the pretense of knowledge. Nothing comes from nothing, and you really need to look back at historical legislation, historical interest rates, and the historical legislation even before the central bank to start to understand why the U.S. has this elaborate system of broker-dealers and money market funds and all the rest. So I will try to elaborate a little bit more on that in future videos. Thanks for watching.